In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for another Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Joining me today is Kevin Preston, frontman, lead singer, and lead guitarist in the Los Angeles rock and roll band Prima Donna. Active since 2004, their latest single, Atomic Love, is out on Wicked Cool Records and is a recent coolest song in the world. Let's give it a spin now, and then I'll be back on the line with Kevin for your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. You in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and my guest today for our Coolest Conversations is Kevin Preston, lead singer and guitarist for the LA-based band Prima Donna. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Manfred, I miss you, pal. I miss seeing you around.
Oh, I miss you, too. But, you know, we're getting better. Things are getting better, don't you think?
I'm vaxxed. Oh. I'm vaxxed. I'm ready. I'm feeling it.
So you're completely vaxxed.
Completely. Oh yeah. I have a third eye, the whole bit, man. It's great.
Well, I was going to ask you specifically, what zombie tribe did you get in then?
Yeah, I have some antennas. I'm totally, I think I'm a full gray now at this point. Hey, I can't complain.
Well, which one did you get? So I got jabbed with Moderna the first time, and I'm waiting for the second one. What jab did you get?
Well, I got the Cadillac, man. I got Pfizer.
All right. Yeah.
No, I think you get whatever you can get. I'm kidding around. Pfizer. But it was all right. Actually, it was like the most painless shot I've ever gotten.
So there was no, both times you didn't have any type of reaction to either one.
Not really. My arm was super sore. I couldn't play guitar for a day, which was a drag, but that was it.
Yeah. I had a super, as I said, just the first one and the, and trying to lift my arm over my head, it's like, this sucks. So that's very cool. You've been vaccinated. How did you, your family, friends manage, over the past year? Did everybody stay healthy? I hope.
Yeah. Thank God. Everyone stayed healthy. I know a few people that got it and they had mild symptoms, but everybody close to me stayed really healthy and we followed the rules. You know, what can I say? I did a lot of solo activities. I surfed a lot. Snowboard, it's just California stuff. I've been playing tennis a lot. That's a new thing.
Oh, wow. So I played tennis when I was like, around 12, 13, 14. So had you played tennis when you were younger, picked it up again, or did you just start playing tennis for the first time?
No, yeah, this is a pandemic hobby for sure. But I love it. You know, I'm not, my skill's not there yet, but I've got the John McEnroe trash talk down. That's why I got into it, to be honest.
Hey, Jimmy Connors was my guy, you know, he was always completely like a little kid on the court, throwing little tantrums, but he wound up marrying some like Playboy playmate or something like that.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Hey, Are you a double backhand or single backhand? Do you remember?
Myself, a single backhand.
There you go. That's the right answer.
Yeah. And I was, you know, not that great, really. It was fun. You know, I did the guy that was the coach or teacher, or whatever. He was a bit, I mean, you know, it's like the Mighty Manfred's not meant to be a tennis pro, you know, but he was very good and very helpful. And, but I just never had a time, you know, to really pursue it beyond that. When you were playing tennis, who do you have a regular partner or who are you playing with?
It's just me and the wife.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. We got to hang out with Serena Williams a few times. So since, you know, she's just the coolest. And since then we've been threatening to play tennis, you know, for years, and we finally picked it up. We finally had the time, and we're into the outfits more than the activity, I think. But anyways, you know, she's smoking me already, but I have fun.
Well, I know you couldn't do shows tour last year. We all know that. But do you have a day job otherwise? And if so, how was that affected by the pandemic?
You know, I've been working the whole time. I work in Burbank at one of the studios, and there was a lull, you know, but even in that time, there was so much planning going on. And but everything's back. You know, it's a different world. There's plexiglass everywhere. There's hand sanitizer stands every corner you turn, there's another place you have to use hand sanitizer. You know, I've been thankful. I was able to keep working through it.
So you're on Little Steven's label, Wicked Cool Records. Your debut album for the label was ST back in 2018, and 2019, you guys had a single on the label, Sing to Death, back with a version of, Bananarama's Cruel Summer. Past Christmas, you had a Christmas single, and now brand new 7-inch out on Wicked Cool Records, Atomic Love. It's also our coolest song in the world this week. Did you have the tracks for the new single already in the can, or was part of last year's COVID adventure just getting the single recorded?
Yeah, that was the most exciting thing I think that happened after March. So I think around September, we decided we'd record these songs. I was just sending voice memos back and forth to the guys, and we each went in separate to this studio in the Valley, Unison Sound, and Bruce Witkin produced it. It's like, you know, we just had a good time. It was weird recording that way. I haven't even seen the band really. And we all live so close to each other. We all live in the Valley. And I can pretty much throw a rock at David's house, the drummer. I'm about 2 miles away from the bass player, Lights Out Levine. And then Aaron he's on the other side of the Valley, but he's still, you know, he's 10 minutes away. So it was bizarre, but we wanted to get the record out, and we did it safely. And it sounds like we're all in the room together. I hate to blow the surprise, but yeah, we recorded that on, you know, like separate weeks solo. It was different for sure, but we wanted to get it done. I'm glad we did.
Well, you mentioned working with Bruce Witkin, right? He's the engineer, the producer.
Yes.
And so tell me about Bruce. Who is Bruce, and why did you guys choose to work with him?
I met Bruce through Adam Ant. He had played on the Wonderful tour back in the 90s. And then when we were doing shows with Adam Ant, he was at a few of them, and we'd been planning to do something for a while. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens he's got this beautiful studio in the Valley, and, you know, he's got a pool. So he just sit poolside in between takes, and it's just the perfect, it's just the way I've always wanted to record, really. So yeah, he came out here. He was in a band with Johnny Depp called The Kids, and more recently in the Hollywood Vampires. But he moved out from Florida with Johnny to start their music career, you know, back in the 80s. Uh-huh. And he's been going ever since. He's done some really cool stuff. And he's just, you know, he's like us. It's like talking to you right now. It's that sort of vibe. He knows all of my references. Anytime we're trying to get you know, that language. Sometimes you don't have it with engineers where you're like, oh, you know, like that Heartbreaker song, you know, the reverb on that Heartbreaker song. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Well, where you just say something, you can say, oh man, you know, like you're describing, like that Heartbreaker song, and he knows exactly what you're after. Or yep. You could even be something like, could you make it more purple sounding?
Yeah. What's the synesthesia? Isn't that what that's called?
Is it? That's a fancy word. I'll look that up later.
You know, a lot of our fellow artists, they love to fake that. I don't know if I believe it. I mean, certainly there's songs that make me feel colors for sure. But I think a lot of that's such a lead singer thing, you know, like, oh, yeah, I have synesthesia. I hear colors. Yeah. But anyways, he would get that for sure. Absolutely.
Oh, right. You mentioned Bruce having a pool, and I was wondering, is that the pool where you guys shoot the video for Cruel Summer at?
Oh, that was at my parents' pool. I'm glad you asked. That's in beautiful Sherman Oaks, but he lives right near them. But yeah, that pool, it was my grandfather's. He was an Olympic diver, so it's like 10 feet deep. And I love that pool. It was perfect.
Did you say your grandfather was an Olympic diver?
Yeah, he was a silver medalist. It was in the 60s, and the year he got the silver medal, it was all Americans got gold. And the point difference between bronze and gold, it was like fractions of points. It was super, super nail biting.
Wow, very cool. Are you much of a swimmer yourself?
Oh yeah, not as good as he, but yeah, I love being in the water. It was tough, you know, back in the day when we had the hairdos, it was like hours of flat ironing and blow drying. So I definitely, after I cut my hair, I feel like now I can't be stopped.
Excellent. So
that's a good thing.
Well, so I mentioned, and I'll say again, our coolest song in the world this week is the A-side to the single, Atomic Love. So tell me about how that song came together, Atomic Love.
Atomic Love. So let me set the scene for you, Manfred. I got married in Hawaii in 2018, and it was beautiful. It was just me, my wife, and our immediate family, just, you know, like 10 family members. Both of my grandmas were there, and it was beautiful. So then we got married. All the family flew home the next day. The day after that, we're at breakfast, sitting on the beach at a restaurant on the beach. And everybody's phone goes off at the same time. So everybody in the restaurant picks up their phone and people started screaming. And I'll never forget it. We got this alert. Everyone got an alert on the phone that said, ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. I'll never forget it. Right. So it was pandemonium. People were running out of the restaurant. People were running down the street. It was nuts. And then, so I just kind of, we had 38 minutes before we got the alert saying, okay, false alarm. And it just, that's when the seed was planted. I tried to make the song a little more cheery than that because I'm sitting with my wife and she's saying, well, what do we, should we go, what do we do? You know, do we go underground? What do we do? Do we go get a car? And she remembers it better than I do, but she said, my exact words were, well, I don't feel like dying in traffic. So I just was like, well, you know, I kind of just had the best day of my life. I'm okay if it ends now. And we kind of just stared at the beach and knew, you know, I live in LA. I didn't know where to go in Hawaii. I kind of felt like, well, if they're dropping a bomb, there's nowhere we can really go anyhow. So I tried to highlight that side in the lyrics, just being happy. And I played with the whole missile threat in there too. But yeah, that's what started the tune.
Wow, Kevin. I mean, I do remember that there was this false alarm and that was in the news. And then that was a big thing about why did it take them so long to send the follow-up to say, hey, this is not really happening. But you know what, there's so much crazy stuff has happened in the past, several years that I completely forgot about that. And as you were bringing it up, I was like, oh my God. Yeah. I totally remember this and that you guys were actually there.
We were there. And we had seen Diana Ross the night before, and I was just wondering how she was dealing with it. Because I'm like, you know, I'm a prima donna, but I mean, she's the queen. I'm like, where is she? Like, you know, like they must have put her in some super secret underground bunker. We got to save her, you know. But I think the funniest thing that happened, I wish I had worked this into the lyrics somehow, but the poor waiters, and you know, they're going around table to table, and people are asking them, you know, what do we do? And they're like, I don't know. So the first thing they did was they're like, well, let's hand out to go boxes, I guess. So they got to our, they got to my table, and they're like, okay, here, you guys want to go boxes? And I'm just, I told the poor guy, I'm like, where we're going, I'm not going to need this food, I don't think. Like, but it was crazy. I mean, 38 minutes, it was nuts. But then I'll tell you what, that was in the morning. The rest of the day was incredible.
So your Neutron baby, that's your wife.
Yeah. It's all about her. And yeah, just, you know, I was okay with going. I really was. And so that's what the song's about. And I'm glad you asked me, because I don't think it, if you listen to it, I don't think you'd quite dig for the for the true meaning of it, you know.
Will either of these single sides turn up on the next Prima Donna album?
I really like the idea of doing single only. Mm-hmm. You know, that's such an old school thing. I love all the British bands would do that, right? I don't know if it was such an American thing, but I love that. All the great British like punk power pop bands, and well, all of them really, they do single only tracks. So Wicked Cool's given us an avenue to do really neat boutique things like that. And I'd really like to, we're going to resist putting them on a new album. If that answers the question, you know, you never know. But I think this song, I wrote this song to be on a 7-inch, and the B sides are also chosen to be B sides on a 7-inch. I'm a big vinyl collector, as you know. We've DJed together a few times, I like that, you know, I like that whole culture. So,
well, let me ask about plans for an album. Is that something you guys will be working on later in the year, or what's the long road for that?
That's the plan. So everybody got their second shot last week, I think. So we're waiting to get back in a room and jam together. There's a couple ideas floating around. So that is the idea. This year we'll record something.
Well, with the new single out now, are you going to try and promote that with stream shows online, or is it, you know, hold off for now and just try and do some live gigs in the fall?
We're we're so conflicted on that. We may end up doing the live stream thing, but we've done a few of those in the past. And then when the pandemic rolled around, we were already kind of over it. It's such a weird, I like that people are doing it, and I'm, you know, people enjoy seeing them. It's weird to do them though. It's weird playing a song and then just having silence after, you know, and just sort of, you know, you're got any reaction. I'm waiting for people throwing things or clapping. I don't really care. I just like the energy of it, but we may end up doing a live stream. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, you know, so the Woggles, we haven't done any live stream thing, but thinking back to what you're saying about, you know, playing a song and then there's absolutely no reaction, I just channeled back to the early days.
Well, maybe I'll just invite you to come in the room and throw things at me.
Yeah.
When it gets awkward, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned you guys live fairly close to each other in the Valley. And I know that the guys in the band, you guys all grew up together, but I can't recall your specific story. Was guitar your first instrument?
Yeah. Well, I was playing drums, but just the way kids do. It's such a, you know, pots and pans sort of deal. So I definitely thought that I would play drums, and I still love doing that. But then I 1994, I was just surrounded with cool guitar music, and I was like, well, that's what I want to do. So yeah, I've been playing since. I love it. I don't go a day without picking it up.
So you started playing, you said, about 1994.
Yeah. And I was playing mostly, I still love playing like flamenco guitar. Well, so a lot of guitar players, you get the nylon string guitar first because it's easier on your fingers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went quickly from trying to play rock guitar on it to going, well, maybe I'll see what this is really about. And yeah, I started playing classical guitar. That was my jam. And then eventually I want to move around and do the thing. And yeah.
Well, was there like a specific epiphany when you decided that you needed to rock, or was this something that just sort of gradually developed?
Oh no, there was a specific moment. I remember so clearly the day Kurt Cobain died. Oh. And they showed Nirvana videos nonstop on MTV for like a week straight. And, you know, just seeing that and the seriousness of that situation, I was just like, I want to play guitar. And just Green Day and Weezer, I had like this, you know, 1994, the way people talk about 1964 and seeing the Beatles on TV, yeah. Yeah. That was my 1994 and 95, you know, it was just that beautiful 2 years of just, you know, rock and roll had a really good moment on MTV, and it impacted my life, changed my life.
Well, you mentioned Green Day as part of that. And I know that, what was it, in 2018, you and Prima Donna's drummer David Field joined with Billy Joe Armstrong and his side project thing, his band The Long Shot. And prior to that, you played with Billy Joe and the Foxborough Hot Tubs, along with other members of Green Day. And you've also played as a touring member of Green Day. How did you get in that circle?
You know, when they were out here doing American Idiot, I was in a band at the time called The Skulls, a 77 punk band. They were one of the like LA punk pioneer bands. But so by that time I was in high school and playing with The Skulls, and they were recording American Idiot. So Billy Bones, the singer of The Skulls, and I we just kept seeing them around town. You know, they were in town recording in LA. So we kept seeing them on Melrose, Headline Records, places, you know, cool places like that. And it started there. It was just really neat. They needed a guitar player for Foxborough Hot Tubs. Billy wanted to sing on tour and not play guitar. So yeah. I was the guy they called, and I've just been going ever since. I love it. It's such a dream come true. And yeah, we were all ready right before the pandemic to go on tour. And then things, you know how that went.
yeah. So the fact that you've been able to, you know, develop a relationship with him and play with him, as you said, you know, 1994, this is like a group that's really impacting you. Have you ever felt like a kind of like a fanboy and said, oh, man, you don't realize this, but you're kind of one of the big reasons that I'm even playing guitar? Have you ever had that conversation with him, or does that just seem too fanboyish?
Oh, well, I'm a fanboy at heart about a lot of things. And I think we've talked about this before, but I did have that conversation with him once when we were in the middle of Foxborough stuff. And then he immediately changed the conversation we started talking about Johnny Thunders, because he knew, you know, at that time I was pretty much a Johnny Thunders clone. And so he started showing me a bunch of great Les Paul Juniors he had. I think he loves it, but he's so humble. They really are like the most down to earth guys. That's no stretch of the imagination. So I may have started geeking out on him about that once. And then he quickly was like, well, hey, you know, thank you. Let me show you these Johnny Thunders guitars, you know? So, but yeah, I'm definitely, he knows that, you know, but we speak the same language. It's like I was talking about with engineers and producers. We just have that common bond. Every time we're talking about music, we have that same, you know, we have that same pool that we're drawing from, you know.
Looking forward to seeing, you know, you guys back out on the road. And but before we wrap up here, we're going to play the B-side to the new single, your version of He's a Rebel. And I want to ask you about that first. He's a Rebel, that song written by Gene Pitney. Originally, he pitched it to the Shirelles. He'd wanted them to record it. But instead, it famously became a hit for the Crystals, though in reality, it's sung by Darlene Love, who we're big fans of here in the Underground Garage. Why did you guys decide to do a version of He's a Rebel?
Well, this is where you enter the story, Manfred. So I was at the Whiskey Go-Go watching Darlene Love, and like a lot of great shows I go to, I turn around and Manfred, you know, you're just, I could reach out and touch you from where you were standing. And so, yeah, we're sitting there watching Darlene Love, and then she gets to, He's a Rebel. And I've been wanting to cover it for, you know, for years. And it was time. And to me, it seemed like such a great 45 track to do. And I sang the hell out of it. I layered harmonies on it, and it was no easy task. She's just got pipes. That was seeing her do that was just, it was moving. I teared up a few times.
It was a very phenomenal show. I mean, she's an incredible performer. But that show was like in 2015, I think, is when her solo album came out. But, you know, her voice and her artistry just undiminished. You know, a cool thing about those British invasion groups, you know, the Beatles, of course, Manfred Mann, is that they would cover girl group stuff. The Beatles did the, you know, the Shirelles tune Boys and Song with Gusto by Ringo. So you guys do He's a Rebel, and you don't change any of the pronouns. Was there ever a moment where that was considered, like, why don't you sing it as She's a Rebel?
Yeah, I just thought that was kind of sacrilegious. I really didn't want to change Gene's lyrics. I'm a fanboy of Gene Pitney, and just for, you know, I didn't think it was necessary. And
yeah,
we tried a few things, and ultimately I'm like, I'm singing it the way it was written. You know, that's just the way it's going to go down. And I love how it came out.
Yeah. Amen to that. I love that you keep the castanets in there. Who's playing the castanets?
That's Bruce Widkin.
Oh.
Yeah, he threw those on. That guy's he's just a musical dude. He can play anything. And he's got everything. He's got every little percussion thing you can think of. He's got a little toy box.
You know, another cool thing to me about your version is that you're able to bust out a sax solo thanks to Prima Donna member Aaron Minton. Did you consider having a different instrument at the solo section?
No, when we started the band, we wanted rock and roll with a saxophone player. You know, I just, so many great early rock and roll songs I like, the saxophone was even more featured than the guitar, you know? So I just, that was something I really wanted to bring back. So any chance we can get him to wail, and he played that thing, no, perfect. That's nuts.
I think it is very cool. You know, the sax is kind of, to me, like the missing link in rock and roll.
That's a good way to put it. I agree with that completely.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for chatting with me today on Our Coolest Conversations.
Oh man, my pleasure. Also, I wanted to give a shout out to Spencer from Wildlife. He did the artwork on this thing, and it came out great. I love it.
Oh yeah, Spencer is the man.
Yeah.
Not only is he the master of the four strings, but he's also a graphic artist of renown and expertise, isn't he?
He's incredible. Oh yeah.
Have you guys ever done any shows with Wildlife?
No, strangely, that hasn't panned out yet. I they were in LA, and I think I was DJing. I was DJing a Zeros show. I missed them. We haven't done any shows yet, but I know that's in the pipeline. That's going to be a good one for sure.
Absolutely, that's like the 1-2 punch, rock and roll knockout right there.
You put it in the stars. We're going to do it now.
All right. Well, it is.
It's been on the radio.
What's that? Say again?
It's on the radio now. We got to do it.
Absolutely. I'm going to hold you to it. My friend, it is B-side time now. Prima Donna with their version of He's a Rebel in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
See the way he walks down the street. Watch the way he shuffles his feet. Mighty on his head up high when he goes walking by.
He's a Rebel from Prima Donna and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Their version of their Crystals hit serves as a B-side to their latest single, Atomic Love, out on Wicked Cool Records. Thanks again to the band's frontman, Kevin Preston, for speaking with me today on Our Coolest Conversations. and thanks to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Be sure and join me next time around for your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.